Tax Update for Saturday, July 1st, 2006. Welcome to Tax Update for Saturday, July 1st, 2006. This week, what did they mean? Construction in Section 199 under the final regulations. The Tax Update podcast is intended for tax professionals and is not designed for those not skilled in independent tax research. All readers and listeners are expected to do their own research to confirm items raised in this presentation before relying upon the positions presented. The podcast and the documents associated with the podcast may be reproduced freely so long as no fee is charged for the use of the document or the audio file. Such prohibited use would include using the podcast or document as part of a CP presentation for which a fee is charged without prior permission. The podcast this week is sponsored by Lineberg Information Services, located on the web at www.lineberg-services.com. Lineberg Information Services offers email newsletters on matters of interest to tax practitioners. Again, you can visit them on the web at www.lineberg-services.com. This week, after having returned from Syracuse, I'm going to go over an issue that we discussed when I was in Syracuse on Tuesday, and that's a matter where the IRS has released the final regulations under Section 199. We're going to discuss a subpart of that, which is the definition of what is construction for purposes of the 199 deduction. Well, I came through Syracuse only having to wait an extra day due to delays due to the rain in the Northeast this week. I escaped the Northeast much better shape than the IRS central office building, the national office headquarters. If you haven't heard about that one already, they are basically out of their headquarters buildings for the next 30 days due to flooding in the D.C. area that took place earlier this week while I was in Syracuse. Relatively dry. The IRS national office was getting relatively wet. So one quick warning, if you have documents that are meant to go to the national office, be aware the IRS has published a new address that should be used for documents like change of accounting method documents that normally would be filed at the national office. So be sure to check the IRS headliners on where those documents should be going for now if you have to send such a document to the IRS in the near future. This week, though, we'll discuss the Section 199 final regulations on constructions. Now, these final regulations were released by the IRS the 1st of June, and they're effective June 1st. So basically, we have them effective for June 1st. You can electively apply these to prior periods. Now, previously, we were working under a couple of notices as well as the proposed regulations under Section 199. So we're going to take a look, though, now at where the final regulations leave us in the definition of what is construction. Why is this important? Because your activity has to qualify as one of the special activities in order to qualify for the subtraction that's available under Section 199. Now, for those who don't remember, the Section 199 deduction is a deduction allowed based upon the percentage of the lesser of qualified domestic production income or taxable income. And for the years beginning in 2005 and 2006, that percentage is 3%. For years beginning in 2007, 8, and 9, the percentage is 5%. And it's 9% thereafter. Now, a second quirk of the deduction is, even though, and again, it is a lesser of domestic production income or qualified taxable income, we have a second limitation you do have to worry about somewhat, and that is W-2 wage limitation. And that is one half of the W-2 wages is the limit. And for years beginning after May 17, 2006, which was when the regulations came down, or when actually I should say when Congress passed the Tax Increase Prevention Act, which, as we all know, doesn't seem to have prevented tax increases, at least in certain areas, but nevertheless, no one ever said there was truth in naming of tax bills in the Congress. For years beginning after May 17th, it must also be related to domestic production. This was really more of a loophole closer because previously the wages could have been related to anything. They really didn't matter. It was just W-2 wages. For years beginning after May 17th, 2006, the wage cap will have to relate to domestic production. What that means from a practical standpoint for calendar year taxpayers is that for 2005 and 2006, we're going to be facing all W-2 wages are in. Then for 2007, we'll begin to have this tracing of wages to domestic production in order to be able to take the deduction for the domestic production deduction, the 3%, the 5%. It'll be actually the 5% for years beginning in 2007. That we'll be able to take, and we'll have to link that to wages that are linked to domestic production. Of course, that begs the question, what's domestic production? Well, as you're probably aware, there were a litany of items that qualified as domestic production under Section 199. Today, we're just going to take a look at the special rules that dealt with what is domestic production for purposes of the construction definition. What is construction and how does it work? Well, it turns out that these regulations, and if you look at the materials that I've given you, if you've downloaded those from the site, you'll notice they're broken into two pieces. At the beginning, we have the commentary that came along from the Treasury when they released the final regulations describing the changes they've made. And that commentary goes on for the first six plus pages of the materials. You're going to find that commentary. However, the major definitions for those involved in construction, and we need to worry about what is construction, are found in Regulation Section 1.199-3M. Under those provisions, we find the rules that will tell us what is construction. Because if it is construction, and the question here is what qualifies as construction for purposes of determining qualified domestic gross receipts, domestic production gross receipts, once we have that, we then can flow through the rest of our issues under Section 199 to come up with our income. But we first have to have the proper activity to allocate the receipts to, and that's where everything will fall through and come down. So our question becomes quickly, what qualifies as construction? Now, interestingly enough, elsewhere in the code, we have many descriptions of items, but we don't really have a good description of the term construction. We have long-term contracts under Section 460 of the code that generally apply to construction matters. A manufacturing gets a special exemption, but we don't really look any place for construction. And the definition we're going to look at here also, we should be very much aware, is not going to be tied to a state law definition of contracting. So we're not looking for just people who are considered contractors by the various state laws. Construction may include people who are not considered contractors under state law. As well, construction may not include people who are considered contractors under the relevant state law. So it's going to be important to look at the definition here rather than just presuming because my client is a contractor, he's in under these regulations, or because my client is not a contractor under state law, he's out. So we need to take a look at the various issues. Now, Section 199-3M, basically, Section 199 provides that for a construction contractor, you've got to be an entity engaged in the active conduct of a construction trade or business, that it's going to apply to the construction of real property performed in the United States, and that this construction must be in the ordinary course of the taxpayer's trade or business. As discussed, Regulation Section 1.199-3M deals with what do these terms mean and where are we going to find the types of activities that we're going to be able to allocate as domestic production gross receipts, and from that come down to find out what we're going to get as our deduction under Section 199. Now, Section 199-3M begins at little 1 under it and little I under 1, with a general definition of the construction of real property. And the definition we find in there tells us that in general, the term is going to deal with NAICS classifications with a two-digit code of 2-3, the North American Industry Classification System, code of 2-3, and any other classification under that system that relates to the construction of real property. So your first test is, do I have the proper type of a business? Is, in fact, my primary business under the classification system one that is construction-related? We're told essentially that 2-3 is automatically in there, and then we have other ones like this that will qualify. Specifically, we're told 213111 for drilling oil and gas wells qualifies, and 213112, support for activities for oil and gas operations, will qualify as construction under these rules. Now, it also points out that basically it needs to be regular and ongoing. And the definition of regular and ongoing found under double I is that it sells essentially within 60 months of the date of completion of construction. So whenever we take on a piece of property, we don't hold it for longer than 60 months before we sell it. That should be the normal. And that is our regular activity. So what they're looking at here is you're not going to be able to get self-constructed property you use in your business and then turn around, sell that later, and try to claim that that particular gain represented domestic production gross receipts. You've got to be regularly in the business of selling, building these facilities, and selling them within 60 months of their completion. That's actually a pretty good long time period, so I can't imagine that most contractors are going to have trouble, considering that the 60-month period is 60 months from date of completion. As well, remember that most contractors are working on projects for third parties. They don't really own the property under construction. A home builder is a little bit different. They may own the property and they've got to get rid of it within 5 years. Most home builders seriously don't want to be sitting on a completed house for 5 years before selling it. A new business can qualify if it can show it reasonably expects to meet the regular and ongoing basis tests under this code section. You don't have to wait until you can prove them. You don't have to wait until you meet these definitions by your historical activities. If it's reasonable to presume you're going to meet them, then B under double I tells us that a newly formed trade or business can go on the expectation. Now, the question becomes rather quickly then, well then what is, and this is where we find our definition of activities constituting construction, what represents activities constituting construction? And that we find under 1.199-3M2. And their little I tells us that our activities must be to erect or substantially renovate real property. That those are the activities, and it says including activities performed by a general contractor or that constitutes activities typically performed by a general contractor, and it specifically says, for example, activities related to management oversight of the construction process, such as approvals, periodic inspection of the progress of a construction project, and required job modifications. So if you have a general contractor, you don't have to break out the construction management function separately. If you've got a project where you're the general contractor and you are the individual involved with the erection or substantial renovation of property. Now, what those two terms exclude is repair of property. And this becomes apparent as you go through some of the other details. Now, some contractors have a pretty hefty part of their business that represents a repair activity. For instance, an electrician may participate in construction projects, but might also have another part of his business where he does general repairs. You know, if you have electrical problems in your building, you know, you call an electrician out to fix the problem. The repair activities are not going to count as domestic production gross receipts under this provision. That's a service activity. It's not going to be considered construction and doesn't count under these regulations. Now, it includes tangential services are given a definition under 2II. This is on page 9 of the materials if you're following along. And tangential services like hauling trash or delivering materials will count only if they're not the only activity you perform, but they're performed as an incidental part, basically, of a more general construction activity to the same taxpayer. If your taxpayer's only link to the construction site is that he comes in and hauls the trash, or he comes in and delivers the materials to the site, and that's the only link to construction, then your client is not in the process, or at least in that activity, is not in the process of construction, and that activity would not qualify as construction for determining domestic production gross receipts. But if your client is a contractor who incidentally hauls his own materials on site or hauls his own trash away, then that's fine. You don't have to break those out separately. That's what this regulation dealing with tangential services has to deal with. Now we get on to other construction activities, and this is under M3, and this is on page 10 of your materials, again following along. And it has a number of special treatments that we need to deal with. Improvements to land not capitalized as a part of land, such as landscaping and painting, only count if they're performed as part of a larger construction project. So if you have a landscaper or a painter, you're going to have to take a look not just at what your client's doing, but what was the general project. If your landscaper is merely putting in new landscaping on a building that's already standing, and that's the only thing being done is changing the landscaping, it's not going to qualify. Similarly, if your painting client simply is painting an existing building, that's not going to qualify. However, if they do those as part of a more general construction project, we're putting up a new building and the landscaper and the painters come in to put the landscaping in for the new building that's going in place and to paint the new building, then those activities will qualify for domestic production gross receipt status under the contracting classification. Now, grading, demolition, clearing, excavating, and other activities that physically transform the land also only count if performed as part of a larger construction project. If they are done as a standalone project, they're not construction. if they're done as part of a project that basically we're performing these activities to get the process running to be able to do the construction work, then as part of the larger project, you'll be able to count those activities. What this should tell you is clients who are in these two businesses will probably be splitting their receipts, and they'll be splitting their receipts not based on what they do on each job, but rather what the overall activity at the job site is at that time. If they're the only person on site, most likely they're not going to get any domestic production gross receipts. If, however, they're brought in by the general contractor to perform this service, or perhaps even the owner, if the owner is doing his own general contracting work, then and only then will you be able to treat this as contracting work and be able to get the deduction. And in fact, the regulations provide that such taxpayers must make a reasonable inquiry on the issue, especially since the other taxpayer is going to be the ones doing the true construction activities. So your client has to basically get the evidence from the others involved on the job site that they are doing truly construction activities, and at that point your client then can take the domestic can count these activities as domestic production gross receipts. And again, remember, when reviewing 199, this is the starting point for determining what you're going to be able to take as a deduction. Now, drilling oil and gas wells, minings, and activities that become intangible drilling costs also under this same regulation count as construction activity. So if you have anybody in the mining industry, you have any activities, construction, drilling oil and gas wells, or anything that counts as intangible drilling cost, which, as was explained to me once, is anything that goes down in the hole for oil and gas, basically if it's those activities, that counts as construction. Administrative support activities are covered by IV under that same section, and this one talks about billing and secretarial services. In those cases, these must be performed by a taxpayer performing construction activities. In this case, if you had a third party who came in and provided those services but did nothing else on the construction project, unlike the landscapers and the painters, they're not going to be considered construction activities. But if you have a contractor who is involved on site and who does these in-house, then we don't have to break out the portion of his expenses or his fees that represent the cost or the charges for these activities, for the billing and secretarial services. They must be incidental and necessary to the construction project. If so, then they do count. You can use them as part of the overall transaction. But again, it must be performed by the taxpayer performing construction activities. As well, there are exceptions at 5V under that, and that tells us some things that don't count. For instance, lease, license, or rental of equipment used in construction will not count as construction activities. So if your taxpayer does nothing but lease heavy equipment that goes onto construction sites, they're not in construction. So strike that. You're not going to be get under this title. Now, I should warn everybody, when you look at these definitions, remember there are other definitions to come under, and we'll make that clear when we get to architectural and engineering services, because those will be defined as not construction, but as we'll discuss, they still can get in under their own definition. And in fact, that's exactly where we're going in the regulations at this point. It goes on and tells us engineering and architectural services do not count. But the caveat is they make a reference here to N under this section. Well, basically, if you go to N under this regulation, you're going to find that they get their own definition, because those services have been defined separately in the code as being eligible for the domestic production gross receipts treatment, or being basically their domestic production, they get Section 199 treatment. Those definitions are found separately. So if you have an architect or an construction engineering individual or client, you need to look separately there. Now, those clients may have more trouble with wage limitations, especially if they're a sole proprietor who's working on their own, but that's a whole different topic and somewhat more involved. Now, the other catch, remember, we had to be involved with real property. Well, what is real property? Well, the real property definition borrows its definition from initially the regulations, inherently permanent structures as defined by the regulations under 263A, the Uniform Cap Rules, 1.263A-8C3, and this is on page 11 of your materials, other than machinery as defined at C4 of those same UNICAP regulations. it borrows that definition, then it adds a few others on there. Now, it goes ahead, does not count property that is not real property in the hands of the taxpayer, but may be incorporated into real property. What does that term mean? If your client makes bricks, you're not in the construction business. You're in the business of making supplies. That those bricks may get used in a building, that's true, but your taxpayer was not the one involved in construction. But realize, if you're making bricks, you're probably under domestic production under the standard manufacturing definitions, but you need to go elsewhere. You have to watch that in these regulations. Remember, if you can fill into any cubbyhole, you're going to be okay under 199. You've just got to find the right cubbyhole you're falling into. Tangible property sold as a separate part of the construction project is not a construction activity. That's section 1.199-3M1. But materials consumed in the construction project do count under 3M6I. What are they getting at here? If your client sells, let's say, refrigerators and dishwashers, etc., as part of the package, in addition to the home, they'll sell all those things and they throw them in, the receipts from those items wouldn't count. However, the things like the wires and the pipes that go in the wall, the bricks, all of those tangible personal property items that are consumed as part of the project, those you do not have to separately account for because they get put into the real property. So the fact they're consumed in the project do count. I would say it appears to me the rough test is, can we take this particular item out of the building without causing real damage to the building? Or is it a thing where if we went to get it, for instance, we probably theoretically could take every pipe out of the building. However, we're likely to do a lot of damage to the building when we take every pipe out. And secondly, we probably need to replace those pipes because usually plumbing is considered a useful thing to have in your building. So those are the types of definition you're going to look at here. And again, that's under M6I for the definitions of derived from construction, as well as the issue of tangible personal property and what qualifies and what does not. Now, it includes infrastructure. Now, this is under M4, nice definition. That includes such things as roads, power lines, water systems, railroad spurs, communications facilities, sewers, sidewalks, cables, wiring, and inherently permanent oil and gas platforms. So those particular items are considered part of the definition of what is infrastructure. Now, a key definition is found at 5, and that is, what is substantial renovation? And this is italicized in your materials on page 11. The term substantial renovation means the renovation of a major component or substantial structural part of real property that materially increases the value of the property, substantially prolongs the useful life of the property, or adapts the property to a newer or different use. Key issues there, key definition, renovation of a major component or a substantial structural part of the property. It must be one of those two, so it needs to be significant. This isn't going to work if you're basically remodeling a small closet in a large office building. That's not construction, because it's probably not a major component or substantial structural part of the property. And in addition, when you're done, you must materially increase the value, substantially prolong useful life, or adapt the property to a new or different use. If that language sounds familiar, it should, because it's sort of borrowed from the language about what a taxpayer would have to capitalize. In essence, you need to capitalize expenditures generally that meet one of those three tests. So what we're looking for is, did you do something that the buyer is going to have to capitalize and recover over the life of the property? Or did you do something that the buyer is going to be able to treat as a repair? Notice that we're looking for some consistency here if you're the IRS. We don't want the buyer to say this is a repair, getting immediate expensing, and the builder to be able to say, oh, no, this is contracting of a significant nature, and we're going to get to treat this as domestic production gross receipts. You need to be, in essence, the IRS wants to make sure that somebody's going to suffer, shall we say, from the definition. Now, also excluded under M6II are qualified construction warranties if you meet two tests. You can ignore the receipts allocable to a qualified construction to a construction warranty if your warranty meets two tests. The price cannot be separately stated for the warranty, So you cannot have a separately stated price in your contract for how much of it applies to the construction warranty you're providing. And secondly, the warranty can be neither separately bargained for separately by the buyer, nor can it be offered separately by the taxpayer in the ordinary course of business. If the taxpayer normally sells the warranty, or if the buyer negotiates to have the warranty added or to take it out, and that has an impact on the pricing, you have to allocate the part of the contract that represents the warranty. The warranty will not be considered construction for purposes of determining domestic production gross receipts. Now, other provisions that we have in here, we have an anti-reacquisition resale provision. That's found at 1.99-3M6III. And what that one tells us is essentially we can't go after we've sold the property, we can't buy it back and then resell it later and say, well, we originally built it, so we get to count that gain again for domestic production gross receipts. Essentially, you can't get it back again and come back after it and take the deduction. Finally, a key issue to remember is that construction does not include sale of land. So if you're a home builder who basically acquires land, or any other type of contractor who's acquiring land, putting buildings up on the land or doing some sort of construction on the land and then selling that to third parties, you have to exclude the portions of your proceeds that represent land. Well, as you might suspect, that may not be the easiest thing to figure out, how much of your proceeds represent land. So what the IRS has provided under Regulation 1.199-3M6IV is a safe harbor for computing the receipts you receive that are considered part of the land cost for purposes of the domestic production gross receipts. And the safe harbor method provides that basically a taxpayer will be deemed to acquire the land right on the date you acquire it, and that essentially that we will be able to treat sort of a certain presumed increase in value as the increase in as the land cost when we hold it. And there are three safe harbor percentages. Now, the safe harbor percentage tells us that we'll get a 5% increase for land held less than 60 months, 10% for land held more than 60 months but not more than 120 months, and 15% for land held more than 120 months but not more than 180 months. If you hold land for more than 180 months, you cannot use the safe harbor. You're going to have to value this land separately. Now, we go on and have a number of other little definitions here for determining gross receipts and QPI and all those other fun things that we have in here. The regulations then go on page 14 and beyond to give you some examples of applying these regulations as to what's constructions and various situations you need to worry about. You may wish to go through these examples to see if some of them are going to fit into your client's situation and see how the IRS handles the situation and what they're going to do and how they're going to come up with, you know, what they see as applying this to some real life situations. Now, many of us have clients who are in construction, so looking at these regulations is important. But remember that at the point you finish this up, all you've determined are your domestic production gross receipts. We still have the various methods of assigning costs to come down and compute what our net income is, what our income is, our domestic production income, from which we can take our percentage and compare that to our taxable income, take the percentage of the lower of the two and do the W-2. But it's very important to note that until we have the starting point, we have nowhere to go under Section 199. So these regulations are important. I also would suggest you take a look at the rest of the 199 regulations. Take a look, follow through. Many CPAs got confused and believed that since this was meant to replace problems that involve the United States, the European Union, all that foreign activity, that they don't need to worry about it. Reality is this primarily affects domestic production. That was the whole design. So CPAs need to be aware, if you haven't been aware already after going through the last tax season, that yes, your clients are impacted by this. Now, this has been Tax Update. Again, this is brought to you by Lineberg Information Services on the web at www.lineburgservices.com. And again, you can visit them there to find information of interest to tax professionals. We hopefully will be back on next week to talk some more about these issues coming, and hope to see you all there. Enjoy your 4th of July weekend if you're listening to this before the weekend, or hopefully you enjoyed your weekend if you picked this up after you came back from your 4th of July weekend. and we'll see you again next week.